Welcome to the Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It is Saturday, October the 22nd, 2022. On this edition of the Politocrat, Boris Johnson potentially poised to be Prime Minister of the United Kingdom yet again. I'll be talking about this as well as the role that white voters play in voting in governments that are detrimental to the health of all of us. All of that coming up next.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Yes, 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 of course. Who can forget that line from A Few Good Men? You can't handle the truth. That is one of the best lines in the history of cinema, I have to say. And that line was written by Aaron Sorkin and the film directed by Rob Reiner, A Few Good Men, was released, I guess, in 1992, somewhere around there, 1991, 1992. And this film, it was 1992, this film is one that, listen, I think it's a good film. You heard the two actors there, Tom Cruise and Jack Nicholson, and Nicholson's immortal line will live long, long, long in the memory. Decades and centuries and millennia from now, that line will be replayed. Well, this episode of the Politocrat Daily Podcast, and welcome to it, dear listener, thank you for your time, is not about cinema, it's not about Jack Nicholson or Tom Cruise. It's about something that's much more pressing and urgent and serious than all of those things. Because this is not entertainment. This is not entertainment. When I say this, the this is what's happening around this globe. And it's never been entertainment. Now, for some people who can afford to burn money, it is all entertaining. But for the vast, vast majority of the globe, this is not. Famine on the African continent, Somalia, is in a very bad way right now, involved in civil war as well. It's not the only part of the African continent that has a civil war going on. You look at Tigray, you look at a number of other places, and things are dire. You've got a pandemic that's still going on that some people in the world pretend that is not going on. They pretend as if everything's fine, not wearing masks. You've got social media that continues to be toxic. And you've got a billionaire who is going to eventually own the most popular social media platform. Twitter is, I think, at this point, the most popular. There's TikTok and all the rest. But Twitter is the most used platform, as far as I know. I'll need to get numbers to show that up, but Twitter has at least a billion accounts on it, or at least a billion people using it. That billionaire who's going to be buying Twitter and owning it is saying he wants free speech. Now, what does that mean to someone who is in my view, someone who supports right-wing politics? You've got all of that. You've got what's going on in Ukraine. You've got what's going on all across the globe. You've got elections here coming up in the United States where the midterms are coming next month. Less than what? We're now, what, 3 weeks, 2 weeks almost away, whatever it is now, 3 weeks. I don't even know, 2.5 weeks away from the midterms. Early vote, please. If you are in an early voting state in the United States, please vote now. Don't wait until November 8th, please. You've got what happened on January 6th in this country, US, in 2021. You've got the January 6th committee. You've got all these things going on. You've got what's going on in Europe. I'll get into that a little bit later on. With all these right-wing governments today, it was made official, practically, the Prime Minister of Italy is going to be a fascist. That's what you're getting. Giorgia Meloni is going to be the first fascist prime minister that Italy has had since Mussolini in World War II. You've got all these governments across Europe. You've got what's going on with the Republican Party in this country. And the outright rank racism that has now shown what it always was in this party and in this country. And you have the fascism that comes with that. And you have the moves by this Republican Party, in quotes, it's not even a party anymore, passing all this legislation to stop people from voting, make it hard for them to vote, make it harder for them to vote. And you've got what's going on in the United Kingdom. I say all these things, dear listener, because these are not isolated events dotted across the globe, just so. This represents all of these events, growing movements, a growing movement of fascism, of white dominance. I can't stand the idea that it's called white supremacy because there's nothing supreme about what these people in power are doing. There's nothing supreme about it. That gives a gloss, actually, to the devastation and the damage that is being done by the people in power who are doing this. So this is nothing supreme. This is about dominance, because that's what this is. It's about power and dominance and about the reality that the white people who do this in power structures do not want to lose their grip on power or on control. And with the browning of the United States, people getting more, I mean, this whole country has become more brown. And Roland Martin wrote a book called White Fear. It's available now in your bookstore. And he lays all of this out. He's not the first person to do it, but he lays it out in a very clear way. And he just cuts to the chase. That's why the book is less than 200 pages long. He just cuts right through the BS and gets to the point. Hopefully I will be able to do that on this episode today. All of these events, dear listener, are not isolated incidents. None of them are. What you saw in 2016 with the election, of course, of that piece of garbage in the United States to the White House was, again, part of this whole thing. Russian interference in the election, the corporatizing of things, the Cambridge Analytica and Facebook parts of this, Brexit that same year, the same thing with Cambridge Analytica and Facebook and the financing of Brexit and these foreign governments and, I should say foreign, these billionaires from other countries, Russian oligarchs, piling money into these vote leave efforts and all the rest of it. With Brexit, they had a huge role. This dark money in politics has led to all of this, what we're seeing across the globe, the Steve Bannonification, if you will, of what's going on. Steve Bannon, by the way, yesterday was sentenced to 4 months in prison in the United States with a, $6,500 fine. And that sentence has been suspended pending appeal. So Steve Bannon is free to roam the streets of anywhere. And that's the same thing he'd been doing for a number of years, because he has had a large role in what you're seeing across the globe. I'm not saying that he alone has done this, but he certainly is one of those instrumental in it. He's traveled to all of these places, practically, that I've mentioned in the last few minutes. Whether it's Germany or Austria or France or this place or that place, he's been there counseling these right-wingers, these extremists, these fascists, these racists about how to get back into power and what to say and what to do. He certainly was doing that in England, or at least being on the phone. He had meetings with Nigel Farage, for goodness sakes. He had meetings with Boris. I mean, this is all out there. I'm not making this up. There's photographs of these people sitting around tables talking to each other. And this is now a global, in my view, global white dominance implementation. You've got, and I'll talk about it now. I won't even get to the Conservative Party in the UK yet. I'll talk about this first, actually. You've got the AfD in Germany gaining more seats in the German parliament. You've got Austria and the right-wing things going on there. You've got Viktor Orban in Hungary, far-right-winger, fascist. You've got this dictator in Belarus. You've got what's going on in France now in the French parliament following the election of President Macron to another term. Just a month or so later, you had the parliamentary elections in France, and Marine Le Pen, who lost a second time to Macron in the presidential election just a few weeks before, gained tons of seats in the parliament in France. Her party has a significant block of seats in the parliament. So a lot of what Macron does, and Macron as president is more powerful in many ways than Joe Biden is as president, because the way the structural system in France is set up, the constitution there gives the president there in France more power unilaterally than the United States Constitution gives the president here. And the reasons why that's the case, certainly where it comes to the US, is that the US shook off the monarchy, threw out the monarchy from the United States, and said, hey, we're not going to have a king or a queen empowering government. We're not going to do that here. Here is our system. Now, I'm not saying that in France, Macron is more of a king or monarch in any way, but he does have more power in his office than, let's say, President Biden does in his. Because President Biden's power really hinges on what happens in Congress. A lot of it does. Now, he can have executive orders, but when it comes to effectuating real policy, he is really held hostage by the Congress, the Senate, the House. I mean, this really is where the power is in the country. Or some would say the Supreme Court is where the power is because of the longevity of it. But across Europe, particularly, all of these places, Italy, I just mentioned earlier, you've got France with the parliament there, you've got Germany, you've got Sweden as well. The Sweden Democrats have taken a significant number of seats in the most recent election in the Swedish parliament. The Sweden Democrats, do not be fooled by that second word in that two-word statement. The Sweden Democrats are fascists. And they are a bunch of racists and misogynists, and they don't believe in a woman's right to choose. They are anti-immigrants, which basically means anti-black and brown people, although they will say they are also anti-white white immigrants too, but they don't mind having them here in Sweden, them in Sweden. These are just a few of the countries across Europe where this is going on. It's not conspiracy. All you have to do is read. I don't have to clip every single online article for you, although maybe I should. Maybe I should, because I need to revive the newsletter, which has been flagging since the earlier part of this year of 2022. I really do need to do that again, because people need to read this. They really do. All these things have been in newspapers, credible newspapers and sources. They've been there. The New York Times has talked about this. Tons of newspapers have talked about the Sweden Democrats. The newspapers from all over the globe have talked about this. Go and look at Sweden's newspapers. What's going on in France? That's been reported all over the globe. And the common thread here is that these movements now are trying to institute the last, gasp of white dominance. That's what I think is going on. And it's being financed by billionaires in various places, oligarchs in various places, and it's also being financed primarily, I view this, through dark money. And Jane Mayer has written a book extensively, the investigative reporter for The New Yorker. Jane Mayer, M-A-Y-E-R, she's written about this extensively in a book called Dark Money. I highly recommend that book. And I think that all of these things also are connected, and as I've said, they don't operate in a vacuum. And I get to the Conservative Party in the United Kingdom. For years now, London has been called Londongrad. Why? Because it is well known, it's an open secret, that you have Russian oligarchs having money laundered, their dirty money laundered in London. London is a massive clearinghouse for this. Reports have been done on this as well in newspapers across the globe. And right now in Parliament in the UK, there's not been any kind of investigation into this. There's been nothing that the Parliament's doing about this. Why? I think it's because a load of the people in Parliament also have their hands in the till of these oligarchs and billionaires, particularly from Russia. You have Russian oligarchs or sons of oligarchs being made peers in the House of Lords. It's happened under Boris Johnson's administration. This happened under Theresa May's, where Theresa May is hobnobbing with these Russian billionaires who have connections to Vladimir Putin. I want to lay out all of that because where we are right now, as far as the United Kingdom is concerned specifically, is the end of the Conservative Party as we know it. And I am not going to sit here and play out a violin play the strings. I'm not going to do that here. Because the party can be dust as far as I'm concerned. I could care less about the Conservative Party. It has never stood for the vast majority of the people. Certainly hasn't stood for black folk. Certainly hasn't stood for brown folk. I don't care how many brown people are in cabinet. That means nothing if they do not, and if the party as a whole do not, stand for protecting the interests of black people and anyone else for that matter. But what the Conservatives do is protect the rich, first and foremost. What I am concerned about is how political and economic infrastructure are being destroyed in the United Kingdom, in any country, but in the United Kingdom, where I'm from, where I was born and raised and grew up. That's what I'm concerned about. I'm concerned about that. I'm concerned about that with any country, but particularly the country that I'm from. And this now is very clear to me. That this has been self-inflicted. And obviously money plays a role in this, as I said a few moments ago, dark money. Money from oligarchs in various countries, particularly Russia. Obviously this is something that is a key thing. Brexit, all these things. They weren't just financed by British billionaires. They're financed by Russian billionaires and oligarchs and all these other people. There isn't a check and a balance on any of this, which is why you have it in the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom does not have a fixed constitution. They don't. It doesn't. It doesn't have a fixed constitution. And what we're seeing now is democracy being shredded beyond recognition in the United Kingdom. Ultimately, that's what the other casualty is, among other things. You have an economic infrastructure that was destroyed by Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng and the folks at 55 Tufton Street in London, the IEA and their acolytes. A cost of living crisis, which is what was happening during the time that Kwasi Kwarteng, the ex-chancellor, the ex-emperor of economic chaos, was destroying the country with this mini budget. This is what was happening. There was already a cost of living crisis in the United Kingdom. And by the way, we are already in a global recession. Do not let anybody fool you. We have a global recession. The COVID pandemic is continuing. There are companies and businesses, small and multi-billion, who have lost money and they want to recoup their money over these last 2 years of a COVID pandemic, which continue on, by the way. And that has contributed as much as anything, if not more so, than this war in Ukraine, illegal war by Vladimir Putin, to all of this global instability, inflation, high interest rates, higher prices, all the rest. It's all contributed to this. And now, against that backdrop, there is the potential of Boris Johnson, disgraced, a criminal, a lawbreaker, a liar, a racist, a misogynist, potentially returning to number 10 Downing Street less than 7 weeks after he left that very same address as Prime Minister. When you even have a scenario like that, where you have someone who is disgraced, someone who was absolutely a disgrace to himself, and who stabbed himself in the back, no one else did, and the specter of voters, white Tory members, voting him back in again over the guy who already showed you that he is capable of trying to steer and successfully steering the country out of economic turmoil and chaos during a pandemic. Well, it is very clear that you are only voting for that person named Boris Johnson for one reason and one reason only.
That plan for jobs has protected
many. Are you going to do anything about the ambulances waiting and the people dying out? Well, don't you think 12 years is long enough?
Yes, and we are.
12 years? You've done bugger all about it. People have died and all you've done is nothing.
Well said. And the woman that you heard there was talking to Steve Barclay, who was a member of the Boris Johnson cabinet at the time. This is back in August of 2020 when Boris Johnson was still in power and wasn't doing anything as the Conservative Party leadership contest in the United Kingdom was playing out. Steve Barclay there talking in an on-camera interview, and a woman comes up to him and says, you've done nothing. Well, you just heard I don't have to say it again. She interrupted and said, are you going to do anything about all these people dying? Do anything about the ambulances? And again, you know, she's right. 12 years in power for this Conservative government, and they have really tanked the country. Listen, there's no question about this. And are there Conservatives out there in the world as politicians and party members who are dismayed by this? Of course there are. But that is not the focus of this episode. The focus is the reality of the vast majority who seem only too content in that party to see the working class and the middle class brought to their knees. And Boris Johnson coming back potentially to resume an authoritarian, craven, dishonest government will end up putting everyone else on the margins. So many people are already on the margins with the higher energy bills they'll pay this winter, with all the rest of it. And there is no sign of this turning around. Look, it's an economic crisis, yes, and it's true that it's around the globe. As I said, it's a global recession. But what you've got now in the United Kingdom is nothing called democracy. You don't have that in the United Kingdom right now. And some of us would say that you've never really truly had it in the United Kingdom, certainly not here in the United States. Now, listen, people here in the United States can vote, but it's this attack on their ability to vote that is not democratic at all. So therefore, you don't have democracy in that regard. When you have measures in place in various states that are designed to prevent black, brown, and elderly people of any race from voting, and young people of any racial background from voting, you don't have democracy. You don't. Doesn't exist. Even as there are other people, mainly white, mainly more affluent white voting, white voters. Just because you have a group of voters who can vote, that doesn't mean there's democracy, especially when many people in the same country cannot vote or are having their lives made very, very difficult if they try to vote, or they're being intimidated. That's not democracy. Democracy is supposed to apply to all of us, not just to some white voters who can afford to go and vote, or who can afford to not have to worry about the financial issues that many people across the globe have to worry about. That's not democracy. That's a fiefdom. That's a cabal, a small group of people picking your prime minister as they do in the United Kingdom. That's what's been going on now for the last three prime ministers. Do you know, dear listener, that the last three prime ministers in the United Kingdom, none of them were elected by the people of the United Kingdom. They were elected by a mere few hundred thousand people. Liz Truss, just last month, was elected by 81,000 people in a population of the United Kingdom of 68 million people. That, dear listener, is not democracy. In 2019, Boris Johnson, in July of that year, was elected by, about 100,000 people, or whatever it was? His Conservative Party, just a few months later, in December of that year, 2019, had a landslide victory in the election, the general election, as Labour plummeted to their worst defeat in a general election since 1935. The Conservative Party had a mandate. Now, I keep saying Boris Johnson had a mandate. Not exactly true. As Susie Boniface points out, she of the Daily Mirror, points out, the Conservative Party had the mandate, not Boris Johnson. He is the first of among equals as a prime minister. These are my words now. He's the first among equals as prime minister. It's the party that gives him the mandate, and the mandate is achieved in the general election when the voters pick the MPs in their constituency. And if more voters choose the Conservative MPs in their constituencies by an overwhelming majority, then that's where you get the mandate. 80 seats, which is what Boris Johnson and the Conservative Party got. Now, Boris Johnson himself was one MP out of 327 plus Tory MPs. He didn't have the mandate, the party did, because the vast majority of the party's seats were filled by those who voted to have them filled by Conservative members of Parliament. And what I don't like is the corporate news media saying things like, well, Boris Johnson got stabbed in the back, repeating that kind of nonsense. He didn't get stabbed in the back by anybody. His ego and his narcissism and his cravenness and his hunger for power and his dishonesty stabbed him in the back. That's what happened. It wasn't Rishi Sunak. I'll get to Rishi Sunak in a few moments. But what you are seeing, dear listener, is trouble for the Conservative Party, but more importantly, trouble for democracy, trouble for the infrastructure of the United Kingdom, and trouble for the country at large. Brexit was self-inflicted. This mini budget, as I was saying earlier, self-inflicted, helped destroy the economic foundations of the country, Brexit as well. And now you're about to have, potentially, if Chris Mason is to be believed, he's the BBC political editor, who today tweeted out a report or a comment or a tweet, put out a tweet saying that there are people within Boris Johnson's circle who say that there are 100 MPs who have nominated him. Now, I don't know if that's true or if that's false. Maybe that is a tactic. But the specter of this person even getting near that number, after everything that we know about Boris Johnson, would be appalling, and it would be the end of the party. It would be. Would be. And what I really want to get to is what we saw over the summer. And you heard the lady there having a go at Steve Barclay, who I forget what position he had in the Boris Johnson cabinet at the time. And by the way, he's still in, he's in Liz Truss's cabinet for the next few days until she leaves office. But that woman that you heard, white woman that you heard, is representative of a lot of people across the United Kingdom. And the notion that you'd bring back a Boris Johnson who violated the law, lawbreaker, unlawfully prorogued Parliament, who lied about all of these things while he was in Parliament, who, you know, is a serial adulterer, who I think, you know, bonked it off with Nadine Dorries and all these other, you know, I'm telling you, this guy's a degenerate who did all these things. The fact that voters in the Tory party would actually bring him back shows you something about the way that I think some white voters operate when it comes to choices between black candidates and white candidates. Choices between brown candidates and white candidates. There are always exceptions. And those exceptions prove the rule. Whether it's in the United States with you-know-who, and the fact that more white voters voted for him the second time around in the 2020 presidential election in the US. And had it not been for black voters, particularly black women, we would have had a second term of that piece of garbage. Whether it is in the Conservative Party leadership contest that occurred just last month, that culminated in 81,000 people in the United Kingdom, vast majority of them white, male, rich, Tory members, voting for someone who was eminently far less qualified for the job than the brown person who obviously and demonstrably was clearly more qualified for the job of Prime Minister. Liz Truss was the, and still is, last time I checked, white and female. And clearly, and still is, last time I checked, still a very empty vessel with no real knowledge about the job, no real understanding of how to read a room. No understanding, dear listener. No understanding whatsoever. Doesn't know how to read the room. Showed you that she didn't give a damn about the people. Just listen to those radio interviews on BBC Radio, local radio stations, just last month. Couldn't care less. What are you going to do about this issue? What are you going to do about that issue? Oh, by the way, let me just refresh your recollection.
But I just want to get this question in because it's something that is very close to us and we are running out of time. Child poverty, lots of questions about that sent into us on Twitter. Your government has been in charge for 12 years. In that time, child poverty has increased in the Northeast. What are you doing about that?
Well, the number one thing we need to do to help deal with the issues that families face is to help more people get into work and create those high-paid jobs. And that is exactly what our mini-budget is about. It's about getting Britain moving, it's about getting the infrastructure built, and it's about attracting investment around our country, including into the Northeast.
We've had lots of questions in about the sea life deaths on the Northeast coast. Are you committed to another investigation and really sorting that problem?
I would need to look into that issue, to be honest.
Right. You haven't already, then?
No, I haven't. I know that the Environment Agency are looking at the issues, but I will certainly be raising that with the Environment Secretary.
That is what 81,000 mostly white, mostly male, and predominantly rich Tory members voted for just last month. A prime minister who didn't know the first thing about anything. A prime minister who, when she was running for the leadership of the party, couldn't find a way out of a press conference where she launched her leadership bid. Couldn't find her way off the stage at the United Nations. And in interviews like the one you just heard from BBC Radio Tees, T-E-E-S, had no idea how to deal with these questions. Didn't even look into one of the issues that you just heard there. Didn't deal with that issue. Real crisis. Oh, I have to look into that with the environmental secretary or whatever. I mean, come on. That's what white voters in the Tory membership were comfortable voting for. They knew that Liz Truss didn't have any know-how about anything. As I keep saying, Theresa May demoted her from a position in May's cabinet. Demoted her. She's not smart. She's not bright. Everyone knows it. It's not anything against her as a human being in terms of being a woman or in terms of her being a white person. It's not about any of this. It's about what the facts are. It's about what everybody sees in front of them. It's about what I see with my own two eyes. It's about what everybody knows. It is about what these Tory voters knew. They knew that Liz Truss didn't have the bona fides that Rishi Sunak had and has. They knew this. But what I think they did is clearly vote with their whiteness and not vote with what was going to help not just themselves, but the entire country. There's no accident and no doubt that Rishi Sunak was going to stand with rich people. Of course he's going to. But what you did get from Rishi Sunak during that leadership contest was a cold, clear-eyed, reality-based approach to trying to stem the tide of these severe economic problems. After all, he was Chancellor of the Exchequer in Boris Johnson's cabinet for 2 years and had done a pretty darn decent job. There was no question about that. And the British press, let me make this clear, not the British, let me say this clearly, the English press, because there is a difference, the English press, particularly the right-wing Fleet Streeterati, those right-wing newspapers on Fleet Street, and some of the more so-called centrist corporate newspapers as well. But the right-wing corporates and the centrist corporates, they all ignored Rishi Sunak. They kept talking repeatedly about Liz Truss, Liz Truss, Liz Truss. All summer, Liz Truss is the favorite. Well, not all summer. But once it became clear that the contest was going to be between Rishi Sunak and Liz Truss, all of them were going, Liz Truss, Liz Truss, YouGov polls, Liz Truss, Liz Truss. And this is all, in my view, this is all manufactured. Liz Truss was nowhere near the top two of the leadership contest in all the stages of it, except for the very, very end. She did not enjoy the backing of the majority of Tory MPs. Rishi Sunak did. And I think that those in, I should say, on 55 Tufton Street were part of that group that engineered some of this kind of nonsense. They certainly approved of Liz Truss. Certainly did. Liz Truss was a former employee, is a former employee of the multi-billion trillion pound dollar conglomerate Shell. And even the Shell president and executive said that there needed to be taxes on the rich. And all Liz Truss did all summer was tell you, no, growth is going to be achieved through tax cuts on the rich, and people have to work and graft and people who care. And she had the utmost contempt for English workers and British workers at large. She wrote part of a pamphlet, a manuscript called Britannia Unchained, just 10 years ago in 2012, saying that British workers needed to graft and that they were idlers, they were lazy. She even was on recordings, audio recordings, in 2017, just 5 years ago, dear listener, talking about how British workers need to graft. They lack graft. And none of that, of course, swayed this overwhelmingly white, male, and rich Tory voting membership. No, they didn't care about any of that. Because, again, for them, it's whiteness that counts over what stability is for the country. They've got their money socked away. They could care less. For them, it's about the primacy in their minds, at least, of whiteness. And they didn't want to see any brown man or any black person become Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. Kemi Badenoch was in the race. She made it to the final four. Now remember, that's the Tory MPs who determined all of that. All of those stages of the contest in the leadership race were determined by Tory MPs, not the membership of the party who were outside of Westminster. Kemi Badenoch was the fourth placed finisher in the 2022 leadership contest for the Conservative Party during this summer. I dare say, though, and this isn't even any kind of bold prediction, had Kemi Badenoch been in the final two of Liz Truss, Liz Truss would have won again. These voters would not have voted for Kemi Badenoch. And Kemi Badenoch is more right-wing than Liz Truss is. What I am saying, clearly now, is that racism plays a role. Racist voters play a role. And especially when you're talking about a contest between a white politician and a black one, between a white politician and a brown one. And this isn't limited to the Conservatives in England, in the United Kingdom. This is also anywhere. I want to cite a case in point to you, dear listener. In 2008, when Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton were jousting, if you will, for the Democratic presidential nomination, there were all kinds of things being said, all kinds of nasty calls and voicemails being left on the phone machine of Representative James Clyburn, a black politician in South Carolina. congressmen. All kinds of, and some of them, those nasty phone calls were from people who said that they were Clinton supporters. They were upset, oh, that you supported Barack Obama, how dare you? Some of them left the most vile and racist voice messages on his answering machine, on Clyburn's answering machine. He got an angry call from Bill Clinton, the former president of the United States. How dare you vote for Obama? How dare you stick up for him? Hillary Clinton herself was talking about, well, all, like Jesse Jackson, all Obama has is some speeches that might have been either from her or from her husband, who screwed that up and said that. It was Hillary Clinton who said things like, oh, well, Barack Obama's not a Muslim, as far as I know. She said that to 60 Minutes. Nothing wrong with being a Muslim at all. But Hillary Clinton knew that that statement with a racist public, a racist white public in the United States, would have its desired effect. And white politicians, regardless of their political party, play this game, dangerous game, all the time. This racist game. Throw out the dog whistle. Throw out the bullhorn. It was Geraldine Ferraro, the white female, who ran and became the first female vice presidential nominee in U.S. history, who was an advisor to Hillary Clinton, who was saying racist things about Barack Obama. It was white voters, some of them, who when Barack Obama won the Democratic nomination in 2008, who said that, oh, you know what? Hillary Clinton got defeated in this race. I'm going to vote for the white Republican. I'm going to vote for John McCain in the presidential election. Instead of voting for the black man who is actually the presidential nominee from the political party I claim to be in support of. Whiteness runs deep. Don't believe me what I said about a person who said that they're going to vote for John McCain? Oh, why didn't you listen to this?
Backing Barack Obama. But many Clinton diehards are doing the opposite of that online, launching websites against Obama and the Democratic Party. Let's go to our internet reporter, Abby Tatton. She's watching this story for us. What are some of these sites doing, Abby?
Well, you just have to look at some of their names to figure it out. Clinton's for McCain is one. Democrat in exile. And there's several called PUMA. That stands for Party Unity, My Ass. If you just look around online, you're going to find dozens of these sites. They've been popping up over the last few weeks. And there's a sign that they're all banding together now. This website, justsaynodeal.com, links to 130 different forums, blogs, or websites. And a spokesman says the individual sites may have different goals. Some of them going after the Democratic Party. Some of them are supporting John McCain. Others want to write in Hillary Clinton as a candidate. But he says they're all united in the fact that these website owners don't want to support Barack Obama in the fall. Now, a spokesman for Senator Obama, when asked about this website, said today that pointed to the event in Unity, New Hampshire, and said Senator Clinton herself talked about the importance of unity. Wolf?
PUMA.
PUMA.
What does that mean again?
Oh, no, you're going to make me say it again in my accent. That is Party Unity, My Ass.
Okay, just wanted to make sure I heard it right.
Yeah, very, very, very funny. Yeah, okay. So that's what, listen, there's another audio clip I was trying to get, didn't get it. But I think this one actually makes the better point. The other clip I was going to get, dear listener, was going to be of a white woman, probably, I think she was in her maybe early 70s, late 60s, who was saying the same thing, basically. She said, party unity, my ass. Obama was a inadequate black male. I kid you not. That's what she said. I wish I had the actual audio so you could hear it. But you don't have to take my word for that. I just played you a clip from June of 2008 on CNN. Abby Tatton, or Tanton, forget her last name, the reporter that you heard from there, who is from England, from the United Kingdom at least, same difference, well, not quite, but you know what I mean, from the UK, just pointed to all those websites that were developed by some of these Clinton supporters who did not want to see Barack Obama become the nominee. And this is more than about the fact that they, as Clinton supporters, didn't like the fact that their candidate didn't make it as the nominee. This is about something bigger. When you're talking about voting against the party that you support, to vote for a Republican because you don't like the fact that a black man is the nominee for the party that you vote for, that is about racism. That's about racist white voters. And even, may I remind you, because someone's going to say, well, look, we voted for Obama when in the presidential election. Yeah. However, think about this for a moment. The majority of white people in the United States of America did not vote for President Biden in 2008 or in 2012. That's a fact. In fact, the majority of white people who vote in an election have not voted for any Democrat in that presidential election specifically since the days of Bill Clinton back in the early 1990s. And it's very clear that the Republican Party has increasingly, and has been over the last 60 years, been the party of racists. And it's not to say that there aren't Democrats who, a few of them, who have these racist views as well. We've seen this with the former governor of Virginia, who did not resign despite calls for him to do so. We've seen this most recently in the LA City Council, Los Angeles City Council, with the four Latinas and Latinos, Latinx, politicians, three of them politicians, one of them a member of an organization, who were saying racist things on audio last year. It took a whole year for this to come out, October 2021. Two of them are resigned, or one of them has resigned, and the other two have not, as of yet, resigned. And the leader of that organization, I don't know if he's resigned or not. Maybe he has, maybe he's not. But the point is that this is not limited to one political party. This is about human beings. It's about people who have these racist attitudes, who are racists, who they have these attitudes. And that example that I played from Abby Tanton illustrates that there are white voters out there who would rather see Republicans in office than see someone black in a position of power representing their party. And it wasn't just these websites. They were political operatives in Hillary Clinton campaigns. Hey, Hillary, you see, I'm trying to say campaign and Clinton at the same time. In Hillary Clinton's campaign, like Harold Ickes, I-C-K-E-S. You go look this up. I'm not making any of this up. Who were just so damn angry that their candidate lost out to Barack Obama. White politicians play these games, these racist games. They're not games. It is rank racism because they know that there is a vastly racist contingent of white voters across the country who are going to accede to these wishes. Same thing with the guy that got in there in 2016. Yes, I know the majority of people didn't actually vote for him. I get it. The Electoral College decided that. But my point remains the same. It should never have been as close as it was. Yes, it was 3 million people difference. But still, it shouldn't have been in a position where this happened. And the media and lots of people were clamoring for this clown, this racist clown, this misogynistic clown, to be in government, to be at the White House. And you're now seeing this in the United Kingdom with Boris Johnson. That's what you're seeing. And we all know that Boris Johnson is a disaster. And now you want to put him in again, potentially? Now, Chris Mason, as I said earlier, is tweeting out, has tweeted out today, that that's what he's being told. Now, we do not know if, in fact, this is true for a start, for a fact. Because there has since been information reported on Sky News, that there are photographs of Boris Johnson on the phone to various political party politicians, MPs, trying to persuade them to vote for him or to nominate him. Now, all of this is going to become very clear in, what, 48 hours' time? When we get to Monday, we'll know for sure what is what. Rishi Sunak at this point has over 110, as of the time I record this, members of parliament in his political party, the Conservatives, the Tories, who are nominating him. The threshold, as decided by the 1922 committee yesterday, was 100 nominations to get into this contest. Clearly, Rishi Sunak is there. That is pretty much all but a done deal. Rishi Sunak hasn't said a word yet since he lost the leadership election just last month. He has been extremely quiet. He's been a church mouse. He's been coming in and out of his house, hasn't said a word. Hasn't said a single word. But I suspect that in tomorrow's papers, Sunday's papers in the United Kingdom, he will write a lot of words. And I believe he will officially announce that he is standing for the leadership of the Conservative Party again. That's what I think he is going to announce tomorrow. Probably will write that in the Times of London, I suspect. I predict that that's what he's going to do. My point is this. If white male and female Tory voters who are members of that party could have no problem voting in Liz Truss, who was eminently unqualified, against a brown man named Rishi Sunak, who was clearly qualified to be prime minister, why does anybody think that these same voters would not vote back in another white politician who is not fit to be in the office of prime minister over a brown man who is clearly fit to be in that office? He's clearly fit. Now, I don't agree with the vast majority of things that Rishi Sunak says. I don't agree with his policies. It is eminently clear, because we're not having a general election anytime soon, but it is eminently clear, in my mind, that Rishi Sunak talks some sense about the economy, is a better chancellor than who we've had. And Jeremy Hunt is doing what he's doing to clean up the mess. But it's very clear that the guy actually does, I think, genuinely care. I think he has a conscience. I think he could be very dangerous, like anyone else in that party, once they get into power, because the sky is the limit then, and they have the 68 million people in the United Kingdom in their palm of their own hands. But I do think the guy has a conscience. I'm not saying that his policies wouldn't be damaging. Of course they would be damaging. That clip that was leaked by the New Statesman back in August, or was it in September? Whichever month it was, this summer, where he said, well, you know, I want to take these resources. I'm just paraphrasing here. I want to take these resources from the Labour areas and stick them in areas like Tunbridge Wells, an affluent area of Kent. I am under no illusion. And he said, take them away from the underprivileged areas. I am under no illusion that Rishi Sunak won't do that. He will do that. He will absolutely do that. What I'm saying is, if you're talking about economic stability and trying to vastly reduce the suffering of millions of people and eliminate that suffering to a large degree, Rishi Sunak's policies during the hustings over those summer months, summer weeks, were definitely going to be much more helpful and would not have cratered the economy in the United Kingdom and tanked the pound as Liz Truss did. He would not have done that. He said over and over again, I've said this a gazillion times, so for those who have heard this before, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to say it again. He said he would not balance and mortgage the future on the backs of millions of people in the United Kingdom. He said he wouldn't do that. He was not going to do that to the British people. Now, over and over again. And the press, who are backed by certain moneyed members of the oligarchy, completely ignored him. They basically ignored him and let us put this stool pigeon in office. And these press people are advocates. These people who run the Daily Mail and the Daily Express and the Daily Telegraph, these are all right-wing billionaires and people who are advocating a position. They are advocates. Those newspapers aren't even credible. They are advocates for the billionaire class. And that's the problem when you have corporate news media. It just completely destroys everything. People are not being informed. They are being propagandized to. In fact, it's not even that anymore. They're being lobbied. In fact, the people who own these papers, in my view, are talking over the British public and are directly lobbying the powerful. Well, they are part of the power structure in a way. And Boris Johnson, let us not forget, all of this attention on Boris Johnson now cannot be talked about without the context. Boris Johnson is a member of the news media in the United Kingdom. He wrote for the Daily Telegraph. He was a columnist for the Daily Telegraph and was so for a number of years. He famously wrote two different columns, one for the Telegraph, I believe, and one for the Times, one supporting Brexit and one not supporting Brexit. True story, true story. He was fired from a job at a newspaper for lying about an affair, if I'm not mistaken. You go look it up. I'm not sitting here making all this up. This is all documented. And the media loves him. These billionaires love him. Fleet Street loves him. At least some of Fleet Street loves him. The right-wing part of Fleet Street. And what is very, very clear to me, dear listener, is that this is behind all of this publicity for him. He gets back on a plane from the Dominican Republic, flies back. It's on a public flight. I mean, he was sitting there, and across from him, there are people from the general public. Reportedly got some booze. Flying in economy class. How about that? But this is what people are actually entertaining. Now, I predicted that Rishi Sunak would win this contest. I'm still sticking to that. But one of the things I would say is never, ever, ever underestimate the racism of white voters, particularly when it comes to party politics. And this is regardless of party affiliation. The end of the world, Skeety Davis. And yeah, well, it's the end of a world. I mean, listen, I am not gleeful about this. I mean, I want to see a world that is a bit more stable than the one we're in. And I would like to see my country be a bit more stable and have responsible leadership. But that's not possible. That's not possible because you've got ego, you've got racists, you've got fascists, and you've got money, and you've got the hunger for power. And those things are things for some people and some white politicians that is just too much. They can't handle it. They've got to have those things. And so there's no self-restraint among some people. None. Among some of these white politicians. No self-restraint. And this applies also to some black politicians, some brown politicians. Power is an aphrodisiac. And some people are willing to destroy themselves to stay in power. I'm telling you. And whom the gods wish to destroy, they first make drunk with power. I agree with that line. That line is centuries and centuries and millennia old. It really is. And I'm telling you right now, that is what is happening to that Conservative Party in the United Kingdom. End of. And as Greg Carr, the esteemed African studies professor, I believe at Howard University, I forget which university, I don't want to get it wrong, Professor Carr, has said many times, this white power structure is ready to burn itself down. And that the, as he calls them, the white nationalists are ready to burn it all down, to burn down their own power structure. And I think that's very true. I think it's very clearly true. It's demonstrably true. Just look at the events across the world. I honestly don't think, dear listener, that you can countermand that point of view that Greg Carr, the professor of Africana Studies, I think it's a Howard, said. I don't think you look at the historical events that are going on just the last few years. Forget the last few decades. Look at the last few years. It's so obvious that that's happening. What's happening here in the United States? What's happening in the United Kingdom? What's happened in France? What's happened in Germany, Austria, Hungary, Belarus, Italy, Sweden? It's clear. They are ready to burn it down. Self-immolation. That's what I think's going on. That's what's going on. It's happening now in the United Kingdom. I'm telling you, this Conservative Party is done for. And in fact, it's done for even if Boris Johnson doesn't win. Because Rishi Sunak, because he's going to get, I still think Rishi Sunak's going to get in. Rishi Sunak is going to be head of that party and he's going to be prime minister. And he will only be prime minister for a few months. Because at the general election, and there are people who dispute this, but in that general election, it's over for the Conservatives. Over. And yes, it's true, as I said earlier, do not discount and never underestimate white racist voters. Never underestimate that, because they will surprise you if you choose to underestimate them. They will shock you. Because once you close that curtain, you go into that booth, you close that curtain, it's between you and the vote. It's between you and that vote. No one else sees what you press in there. It's you and your conscience and that vote. And who are you going to select? Who are you going to vote for? Because you can tell a pollster one thing, but when you go into that voting booth, you draw the curtain or you're just in that little booth and it's your private moment. Only you know what the truth is. And only you cast that vote. None of us who are watching these polls in the corporate news media can see what you do. And then you can come out there and say that you voted this way or that. You can lie. It happens all the time. So that's why it's one of the reasons why I don't pay attention to polls. Polls can say anything you want them to say. And organizations can put out polls and ask all kinds of questions and you don't get the context with the questions. And there we go. And you can get any result you choose to get if you want to, if you are an astute enough pollster. But this thing is ending. I mean, it's only this kind of power structure in terms of white control of it, I think is on the way out. I do agree with Greg Carr. It's so obvious. Look at what's happened in the United States. January 6th of last year, the terrorist attack. Look at what's happening now in the Tory party in the United Kingdom. Look at what's happened all these places. The Swedish Democrats. All this stuff is going on. Italy. Giorgia Meloni has become the first female prime minister and the first fascist prime minister since Mussolini, World War II. I'm telling you. I don't know how anyone who claims to be a student of history can pretend that this is not happening. Because it is happening right before your very eyes. And what we need to do is raise awareness, always, always, educate people, and also get people to vote. At the end of it all, that is what we must do. You've got the midterms coming up in the United States. Just 3 weeks away, just under 3 weeks away. There's early voting going on across the country now. You have to vote Democratic in all of these endeavors. If you want to stand against fascism, and you know, no Democratic candidate's going to tell you this, but I'll tell you this. I'll tell you something for nothing. If you want to stand up against fascism and racism and misogyny and all the rest of it, then vote for the Democrats. Every one of the politicians who appear on your ballots who has a D next to their name has to be someone that you vote for. You've got to vote for the Democrats. This is a way to get rid of all this nonsense. It really is. And that's your one opportunity to do so. Activism is very important, very important. But when you get in that voting booth, you have an incredible amount of power, despite what you are told. You do. And that's why Republicans want to stop you from voting. They know that there's more of you than there are of them. They know that. They know that more people want a woman's right to choose. They know that more people want better health care. They know that more people are interested in having police behave themselves and stop killing black people and brown people. They know all this. And they know that their arguments and their racism, they end up losing on this. At least sometimes they do when it comes to the racism part. But for the most part, that's still very alive and well in their thinking. But they know that their policies are unpopular. They know this. So it's up to us to get out and vote. If you don't think there's anything at stake next month in these midterms, something is wrong with you. The things that affect your life every day are local and they are also national and they are also statewide. You need to vote in these elections, locally especially, statewide and federal. You need to do that. No more excuses. We saw what happened in 2016. And yes, the Democratic Party's got to do a damn sight better, as has the Labour Party in the United Kingdom. If you do not want fascism, and if you do not want an acceleration of all of these draconian things, if you don't want Social Security to completely be eviscerated by the Republicans. So they'll scrap Social Security. They'll scrap Medicare and Medicaid. They will get rid of all of it. They want a national ban on abortion. A national ban. If you want to stand up against all of those things, you need to vote Democratic. That's what you need to do. End of story. End of story. You have to. Because if you've got children, and you've got particularly female children, although male children also are going to be affected by this, if you have female children, and you choose not to vote, shame on you. Shame on you. The choice is yours. Either you vote for future generations to have choices and to actually have the ability to vote. It's the one power we have in this country, in many countries. Many countries don't have this power at all. But either you choose to vote for the future of people to vote and make choices, or you vote for fascism and autocracy. It's that simple. You vote for fascism and autocracy, or you vote for the right of people to choose. It's very, very simple. Dear listener, you have to decide what it is that you want. You can't vote for whiteness. You can't vote for white dominance. That is a death spiral. And it is now up to white voters to decide whether or not they think it is better to vote for whiteness than it is to vote for a future of a country. That's the ultimate decision that white voters have to make. They have to decide whether or not they're going to vote for a better country with everyone benefiting, including themselves, or whether or not they want to vote to destroy themselves and the country. Take your pick. Which would you like? Would you like to vote to destroy the country that you live in? Would you like to vote to destroy yourself in the process? Because you're so hooked on whiteness and on racism and racist attitudes? Or would you like to vote for a future where everyone benefits and the country benefits and you also benefit as well? Take your pick. Give it some thought. Why don't you? Hopefully you will choose wisely. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore.